talked about Jesus being accused of by the Jewish leaders that the miracles he had been doing was by the power of Satan. We discussed that and how that didn't make sense. So today we'll start with the next section. It talks a little bit about Jesus' family. It's found in Matthew and Mark and Luke. We find it's been going on. The crowds continue to follow Jesus. And these crowds become so great that when Mary and her children approached, they were unable to get close to Jesus. They came and wanted to talk to him. Word was passed along to Jesus that they were waiting outside to see him. But again, because of the crowds, they couldn't get to him. And Jesus responds in an interesting way. He takes this, what we would think, a mundane event. It's nothing special. He turns it to an opportunity to teach an important principle. And he asks, who is his mother and his brothers? They're waiting outside for him. This callousness question, it seems, would grab everyone's attention. Who's my mother? Who's my brothers? He then responds that his family was already with him. His family are those who listen and do the will of God. This is the truth. It's the same point that he had made several times in the Sermon on the Mount. Merely knowing God's word is never enough. A person must apply it to his life and be pleasing to God. That's the whole point of this thing. We won't waste our time. Know this word and put it to use. These verses are difficult ones for Roman Catholics, for they mention that Jesus had brothers. Mark 6 and verse 3 gives a list of their names. It also mentions that Jesus had sisters as well, plural. The common response that they may have is to claim that the Greek word for brothers, adelphos, can also mean cousin. They try to explain it away. The problem is that in Jesus' closing statement, he says, for whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and my sister and mother. Separates the groups. The word for sister, adelphi, is not used to indicate a cousin. And so the use of brother, sister, and mother together shows that Jesus is discussing near relations. So if you ever discuss that with someone of that faith, you can use that as an argument. It's sometimes argued that these siblings were Joseph's children. Sometimes we'll say that. From a prior marriage. Again, they're trying to explain away that saying that Jesus had no earthly brothers and sisters. However, to draw this conclusion, you must assume something that is not even mentioned in Scriptures. There's no mention of Joseph being married before Mary, but some people argue that. Let alone, there's no mention of him having children before he married Mary. The second problem with this argument is that Jesus was only adopted son of Joseph. And so Joseph had children by another woman. They would not technically be Jesus' brothers or sisters. But if the siblings shared the same mother, which they did, then they would be related. Matthew chapter 12. Begin verse 46. While he was still talking to the multitude, behold, his mother and brothers stood outside seeking to speak with him. Then one said to him, look, your mother and your brothers are standing outside seeking to speak with you. But he answered and said to the one who told him, who is my mother and who are my brothers? And he stretched out his hand toward his disciples and said, here are my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother. Mark chapter 3. Begin at verse 31. Then his brothers and his mother came, and standing outside, they sent to him, calling him, and a multitude was sitting around him. And they said to him, look, your mother and your brothers are outside seeking you. But he answered them, saying, who is my mother or my brothers? And he looked around in a circle at those who sat about him, and said, here are my mother and my brothers. Whoever does the will of God is my brother and my sister and mother. Luke chapter 8. Begin at verse 19. Then his mother and brothers came to him and could not approach him because of the crowd. And it was told by some who said, your mother and your brothers are standing outside desiring to see you. But he answered and said to them, my mother and my brothers are these who hear the word of God and do it. Very important. Hear the word of God, but also do it. Any comments about that section? The next part is the calming of the sea. Jesus tells the disciples to depart for the other side of the Sea of Galilee. This is found in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, by the way. We know they eventually land in Gadarenes on the east side of Galilee. We can't be certain from where he departed, but it's likely to have been from Capernaum on the north. Jesus frequently crossed the sea to cut down on the number following him, since travel by land was slower, and of course not everyone has access to boats. A set of boats we see, not just one, but a set of boats leave the town. And as they sailed across the lake, Jesus slept in the stern of the boat on a cushion or a pillow. Again, given the demands placed on his time, these crossings were a rare opportunity for him to sleep. He had a chance to rest. Though, again, he's God in the flesh, he still is flesh. And that need must be satisfied with sleep. We find a large storm arises while Jesus is sleeping. Because of the location in this Sea of Galilee, it is quite often that squalls will come up very often because of where it's located. In this storm, the waves in this storm were large enough, they're pouring over the sides of the boat. And it's scaring his disciples. It's causing the boat to swamp. And they're fearful they're going to sink, they're going to die. So the disciples wake up Jesus and they plead with him to save them. And he couldn't believe that they had so little faith. And they couldn't believe he had so little concern over what they were going through. But he rebuked them for having too little faith. So where was their lack of faith? After all, they did come to him for help. They knew Jesus could take care of us, so they had faith that Jesus could take care of this. But that's not really the lack of faith at this point. The disciples of Jesus, they knew who he was. They acknowledged him. They knew he was the Messiah. They knew he had a job to do. They knew he had a mission to accomplish. Did they actually think that God would allow his own Christ to drown before that mission was done? That was a lack of faith. If they thought about it, they should have no cause to fear of drowning because they knew that it wasn't Jesus' time. Jesus then tells the storm to be still and it becomes so. And it's not simply that the wind simply died down. Don't forget these waves are going. And when he tells it to peace be still, everything stops. The waves stop. The wind stop. Again, even if the wind had just stopped by itself, the waves would still be churning for a little while. But they don't. The sea suddenly becomes still. The disciples were already afraid, but this incredible display of power scares them even more. They'd seen Jesus perform miracles and heal people, but here he's the weather he's has command over it. No such power is mentioned being shown by the prophets in the Old Testament, so this is something new to them. Matthew chapter 8. Begin verse 23. Now when he got into a boat, his disciples followed him, and suddenly a great tempest arose on the sea, so that the boat was covered with the waves, but he was asleep. His disciples came to him and awoke him, saying, Lord, save us, we are perishing. But he said to them, Why are you fearful, O you of little faith? And he rose and rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was a great calm. And so the men marveled, saying, Who can this be? That even the winds and the sea obey. Mark chapter 4. Verse 35. On the same day when evening had come, he said to them, Let us cross over to the other side. And when they had left the multitude, they took him along in the boat as he was. And other little boats were also with him. So you get that little information out there. There's more than one boat there. And a great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat so that it was already filling. But he was in the stern, asleep on a pillow. And they awoke him and said to him, Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing? And he rose and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, Peace be still. And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. And he said to them, Why are you so fearful? How is it that you have no faith? And they feared exceedingly and said to one another, Who can this be that even the wind and the sea obey him? Luke chapter 8. Begin at verse 22. Luke 8, verse 22. Now it happened on a certain day that he got into a boat with his disciples. And he said to them, Let us cross over to the other side of the lake. Notice it says lake here. as my version does. And they launched out, but as they sailed, he fell asleep, and a windstorm came down on the lake. And they were filled with water and were in jeopardy. And they came to him and awoke him, saying, "Master, Master, we are perishing." He rose and rebuked the wind and the raging of the water, and they ceased, and there was a calm. He said to them, "Where is your faith?" And they were afraid and marveled, saying to one another, "Who can this be? For he commands even the winds and water, and they obey him." Any comments about that section? Next, we find in Matthew, Mark, and Luke the healing of a demon-possessed man. We're going to see that Jesus and his disciples land in the region of Gergenes, or Gadarenes, depending on which account it is being read. The town of Gadara is not far from the eastern shore of the Sea of Galilee, and it's one of 10 cities of the Decapolis. You'll see that word as well. The Decapolis means the region of 10 cities. Gergesa is a town situated 12 miles southeast of Gadara. Both are located on the same plains, but in the same area. And so the region is known by one or the other names. That's why you see the difference there, where they're so close together. Of course, different translations pick different names for their consistency. Matthew's account, as we read, mentions that Jesus and his disciples were confronted by two demon-possessed men. Mark and Luke's account only mention one man. There seems to be a difference here. But we should take care to note that neither Mark nor Luke stated there was only one man. So it doesn't contradict it. They seem to focus on the man who was the leader and who interacted with Jesus the most. But again, their accounts don't rule out that others might also be present. So you'll see that difference there. These men, as Matthew's account, lived in a graveyard and caused a lot of trouble for the people of the area. Matthew says they were fierce and dangerous. Mark is a little more descriptive when we get to his account. People had attempted to chain up at least one of the men, but he managed to pull the chains apart and broke the shackles that were binding his legs. No one was able to calm him, and so he wandered the graveyard and mountains, and he was yelling and cutting himself with stones. Luke's account tells us that it had been going on for a long time. And not surprising, the man was naked. He did not wear clothing. The men blocked Jesus and the disciples' way, but one of them approaches Jesus and falls down in worship before him. The demons within him cried out, "What about to do with you, Jesus, Son of the Most High God?" So these demons recognize who Jesus is. And they say, "I beg you, do not torment me." It's interesting that these demons, again, had been torturing this man for years, but when confronted by the Son of God, they don't want to be tortured themselves. Jesus tells the demons to leave the man, but then asked the demons for their name before they left. And they replied, "Legion," because they were many. This little fact tells us a number of things. Demons are beings who have identifying names. It also tells us that a person can be possessed by more than one demon at the same time. Let's turn to Matthew 12 and 45 to see an example of this. Again, they can be possessed by more than one demon at a time. 12 and verse 45 tells us, in this, Jesus is talking, he said, "Then he goes and takes with him seven other spirits more wicked than himself, and they enter and dwell there. And the last state of that man is worse than the first. And so it should be with this wicked generation." Mark chapter 16. And verse 9. "Now when he rose early on the first day of the week, he appeared first to Mary Magdalene, out of whom he had cast seven demons." So she was possessed by more than one demon as well. So there's examples of those. But the demons here plead with Jesus not to be sent into the abyss. Instead, they asked to be sent into a nearby herd of swine, these pigs. And Jesus allows them to do that. However, when they enter the swine, the entire herd runs off a cliff and drowns. Mark's account mentions that there were about 2,000 pigs. So it's a big herd. These swine were not a wild herd. We find out that they were actually owned by one or more individuals. And so the destruction of the herd brings up the question of why these animals were destroyed. They were, for lack of a better word, tame. And first, we need to note that Jesus gave the demons permission to enter the swine, but None of the accounts state that Jesus causes the herd to run off. So it wouldn't do to speculate that Jesus caused them. In fact, given the destructive nature of the demons, had they been acting on men, most likely those pigs went mad and ran the direction they had to be facing, right off the cliff. If such was the case, it gives the event a sort of ironic justice. The demons here are trying to stay in this world a little bit longer. They beg Jesus, don't send us away. And yet, they ask to be put in these pigs, and they manage to take themselves out of this world anyway. We find that those hired to care for the swine ran off to town, most likely to tell the owners what happened to their herd. And so word passes quickly from town to town in the surrounding region what had just happened. People came out to see for themselves. Basically, the whole town, Matthew notes, comes out. And they found the man who was once demon-possessed. They were aware who this man was. They'd been there like that for a long time. Here's this man they knew to be naked and demon-possessed. He's clothed. He's in his right mind for the first time in a long time, and he's sitting with Jesus and his disciples. And the reaction is a bit puzzling. Often people hear about Jesus and his powers, they want to know more about him. The Gospels tell us that they were afraid. They were not in awe of the power shown, but they were fearful, and they did not want Jesus to remain there in the area. They wanted to leave. Perhaps it was similar to Peter's own fear that was mentioned in Luke chapter 5. But there we find Peter continues to follow Jesus despite his fears. But these people, for some reason, wanted nothing more to do with Jesus. Jesus did not force himself upon the people. He got into the boat to leave. The man who was just recently healed of the demons wants to go with him, to stay with him. But Jesus tells him that he had other works for him to do. Jesus asked the man to go to his family and friends and tell them what had happened to him, what had been done for him. And so, in a sense, he kind of became the first preacher of the gospel. Where the people were too afraid of Jesus to have him in the region, this man wanders throughout the region of Decapolis, those 10 cities, telling people about the Lord. His work makes a great difference, as we'll see later when Jesus' reception comes next time to Decapolis. Matthew chapter 8. Matthew 8, and begin at verse 28. When he had come to the other side of the country of the Gergenes, there met him two demon-possessed men coming out of the tombs, exceedingly fierce, so that no one could pass that way. And suddenly they cried out, saying, "What have we to do with you, Jesus, you Son of God? Have you come here to torment us before the time?" Now a good way off from them there was a herd of many swine feeding. And so the demons begged him, saying, "If you cast us out, permit us to go away into the herd of swine." And he said to them, "Go." And so when they had come out, they went into the herd of swine. And suddenly the whole herd of swine ran violently down the steep place into the sea, and they perished in the water. And those who kept them fled. And they went away to the city and told everything, including what had happened to the demon-possessed men. And behold, the whole city came out to meet Jesus. And when they saw him, they begged him to depart from their region. Mark chapter 5. A little longer account here. Mark chapter 5, beginning verse 1. And they came to the other side of the sea, to the country of the Gadarenes. When he had come out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit, who had his dwelling among the tombs, and no one could bind him, not even with chains. Because he had often been bound with shackles and chains, and the chains had been pulled apart by him, and the shackles broken in pieces. Neither could anyone tame him. And always night and day he was in the mountains and in the tombs, crying out, cutting himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from afar, he ran and worshipped him. And he cried out with a loud voice and said, "What have I to do with you, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I implore you by God that you do not torment me." For he said to him, "Come out of the man, unclean spirit." And then he asked him, "What is your name?" And he answered, saying, "My name is Legion, for we are many." Also he begged him earnestly that he would not send them out of the country. Now a large herd of swine was feeding near the mountains. So all the demons begged him, saying, "Send us to the swine that we may enter them." And at once Jesus gave them permission. The unclean spirits went out and entered the swine. And there were about 2,000. The herd ran violently down the steep place into the sea, and they drowned in the sea. So those who fed the swine fled, and they told it in the city and in the country. And they went out to see what it was that had happened. And they came to Jesus, and they saw the one who had been demon-possessed and had the legion, sitting and clothed in his right mind, and they were afraid. And those who saw it told them how it happened to him who had been demon-possessed and about the swine. They began to plead with him to depart from the region. And when he got to the boat, he who had been demon-possessed begged him that he might be with him. However, Jesus did not permit him, but said to him, "Go home to your friends and tell them what great things the Lord has done for you and how he has compassion on you." And departed and began to proclaim in Decapolis all that Jesus had done for him and all marveled. So he's going to all these 10 cities. Luke chapter 8. Verse 26. They sailed the country of the Gadarenes, which is opposite of Galilee. 8, verse 26. When he stepped out on the land, there met him a certain man from the city who had demons for a long time, and he wore no clothes, nor did he live in a house, but in the tombs. When he saw Jesus, he cried out, fell down before him, and with a loud voice said, "What have I to do with you, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? And I beg you, do not torment me." For he commanded the unclean spirit to come out of the man, for he had often seized him. And he was kept under guard, bound with chains and shackles. He broke the bonds and was driven by the demon into the wilderness. And Jesus asked him, saying, "What is your name?" And he said, "Legion," because many demons had entered him. And they begged him that he would not command them to go out to the abyss. Now a herd of many swine was feeding there on the mountain. And so they begged him that he would permit them to enter them. And he permitted it. The demons went out of the man and entered the swine, and the herd ran violently down the steep place into the lake, and they drowned. When those who fed him saw what had happened, they fled and told it to the city and the country. Then they went out to see what had happened, and they came to Jesus and found the man from whom the demons had departed sitting at the feet of Jesus. He was clothed in his right mind, and they were afraid. They also who had seen it told them by what means who had been demon-possessed was healed. The whole multitude of the surrounding region the Gadarenes asked him to depart from them, for they were seized with great fear. And he got into the boat, and he returned. Now when the man from whom the demons had departed begged him that he might be with him, but Jesus sent him away, saying, "Return to your own house and tell what great things God has done for you." And he went his way and proclaimed throughout the whole city what great things Jesus had done for him. So again, they asked Jesus to leave because of fear, but why? You think they would want to know more? Any comments about that section? This next part, I don't know if we'll get through it all, because it's kind of in three sections. And we know the story of Jairus' daughter being healed, but there's kind of a story in between that kind of breaks it up. And so we'll be talking about the request to heal her, and then there's a woman with a hemorrhage, and then there's actual miracle. But here's what's found in Matthew, Mark, and Luke as well. We find that Jesus once again returns to Capernaum, though the name of the town is not actually given. And there he's met by a crowd of people, a very large crowd of people. A man named Jairus, ruler of the synagogue, approaches Jesus and begs him to come and see his only daughter, though she's only 12 years old. She's dying. The phrase in Matthew says she's even dead. She's already dead. But it doesn't necessarily mean that she's already expired, but that she was at the point of death. Mark and Luke's accounts say that she was sick, not dead yet, but she dies later, and we'll see that. But this man comes to him and says that Jesus would only lay his hands on her, he knew that she would be healed. The office of synagogue ruler, some of the studies say that it's roughly comparable to what the elder of the church is as far as the roles. One of the roles was to select who would read from the scriptures during the service. But we see that Jesus actually agrees to go, and he falls into the crowds. Matthew chapter 9. Again, this is the first part of this story. Verse 18, beginning. And while he spoke these things to him, behold, a ruler came and worshipped him, saying, "My daughter has just died." And again, you'll see Mark and Luke's accounts is a little different. said, my daughter's just died, but come and lay your hands on her and she will live. And so Jesus arose and followed him, and so did his disciples. Mark chapter 5. Verse 21 beginning. Now when Jesus had crossed over again by the boat to the other side, a great multitude gathered to him, and he was by the sea. Behold, one of the rulers of the synagogue came, Jairus by name. When he saw him, he fell at his feet and begged him earnestly, saying, "My little daughter lies at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her, that she may be healed, and she will live." And so Jesus went with him, and a great multitude followed him and thronged him. Luke chapter 8. This word "thronged," and it's important for the next story. This means there were so many people, there was like a mob. Not that they're mobbing him, but everyone's touching him. Not that they're touching this one. You've been to a concert maybe before, and everyone just gathered. The chicken festival is just so packed. There's so many people there. That's this word. Luke chapter 8, verse 40. So it was when Jesus returned that the multitude welcomed him. They were all waiting for him. And behold, there came a man named Jairus, and he was a ruler of the synagogue. And he fell down at Jesus' feet and begged him to come to his house, for he had an only daughter about 12 years of age, and she was dying. But as he went, the multitudes thronged him. In other words, they were just gathered so tightly. Next, within this story, is the woman with the hemorrhage. As we find this, as they push through this crowd, they're on the way to Jairus' house, that a woman who had been hemorrhaging for 12 years manages to work her way up to Jesus. She heard he was there. And she had decided on her own that if she could just touch the hem of his garment, that she would be made well. Didn't have to talk to him. He didn't have to acknowledge her. She just touched the hem of his garment. So she had spent all that she had on doctors and suffered greatly at their hands. And she was actually worse than she was. She couldn't find healing of this disease. So she manages to do so. She reaches Jesus, and she's instantly healed, we find. But Jesus instantly knew what had happened. Even though all these people surrounded him, he couldn't tell who was touching him. But he knew. And he turned around and demanded to know who touched him. The disciples were confused. Again, they were pushing through a crowd, and Jesus wanted to know who touched him. Lots of people have been touching him. The woman feared that she would be reproved and admitted that she was the one who touched him. It's not that Jesus didn't know. He did know. After all, he knew that she had been made well. And so he was giving her an opportunity to admit what she had done. And without this public acknowledgement, it would remain hidden, and the healing would have served no purpose to God's will as far as teaching others. His greeting calms her fears. He says, "Be of good cheer." Jesus said to her. He then tells her that it wasn't the touch, but her faith is what had made her well. Hers was a faith that had led to action. And he bids her to be whole or continue to be whole. Though she was healed, Jesus ensures them around him know that it was through Jesus that this had happened. Matthew chapter 9. Verse 20. Then they brought him to him. Matthew 9 and verse 20. And suddenly a woman who had a flow of blood for 12 years came from behind and touched the hem of his garment. For she said to herself, "If only I may touch his garment, I should be made well." But Jesus turned around, and when he saw her, he said, "Be of good cheer, daughter. Your faith has made you well." And the woman was made well from that hour. Mark chapter 5. Verse 24 beginning. So Jesus went with him, and a great multitude followed him and thronged him. Now a certain woman had a flow of blood for 12 years and had suffered many things from many physicians. She had spent all that she had and was no better, but rather grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. For she said, "If only I may touch his clothes, I should be made well. And immediately the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of the affliction. And Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that power had gone out of him, turned around in the crowd and said, "Who touched my clothes?" His disciples said to him, "You see the multitude thronging you, and you say, 'Who touched me?'" And he looked around to see her who had done this thing. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell down before him and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, "Daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your affliction." Luke chapter 8. Verse 43. Now a woman having a flow of blood for 12 years, who had spent all her livelihood on physicians and could not be healed by any, came from behind and touched the border of his garment, and immediately her flow of blood stopped. And Jesus said, "Who touched me?" When all denied it, Peter and those with him said, "Master, the multitude throng and press you, and you say, 'Who touched me?'" But Jesus said, "Somebody touched me, for I perceived power going out from me." When the woman saw that she was not hidden, she came trembling and falling down before him, and she declared to him in the presence of all the people the reason she had touched him and how she was healed immediately. And he said to her, "Daughter, be of good cheer. Your faith has made you well. Go in peace." We'll have to stop there. The next time we'll actually see the raising of Jairus' daughter. As they come to him, men come to him and say, "Your daughter has died." And Jesus goes there. Thank you.